time on the show, Writing with Sound, Robot Cowboys, and comics.aadl.org. All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the corner of 5th and William. The show is streamed live at comicsgreat.tv, and then collected later as a podcast at comicsaregreat.com and youtube.com/comicsaregreat. And there's a big announcement coming up about a new destination for Comics Are Great at the end of the show. We'll have to wait for that because, you know, due deference, gotta get to the really important business first. And that would be our guest today. This is why I do this podcasting stuff, because it allows me to rub elbows with the greatest people in art.
I think really we should talk about Neil first.
Oh, he's starting early today, everybody. Paul Story of Storyville.com.
But
we've got
already with the funnies.
We've got a man who does not only a great Jerry Lewis, but probably the best Gilbert Gottfried in the business. Mr.
Well,
Neil.
Technically that's not true. That would be Gilbert.
Gilbert does do a pretty good Gilbert Gottfried.
You know, that's always a good thing. Follow up the professional with, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you with that.
Wow. No,
sorry, I'll resist from now on.
No. You go ahead.
I've already lost this one. It's already off the rails. But we got Neil Kaplan on the show.
Yay!
And I was going to start by being all respectful and everything, because this man, oh gosh, let's go through his credits real quick for those who don't.
I don't think you can go through them real quick.
No, you can't.
Actually, you can.
Digimon. You were played Hawkmon on Digimon, Digital Monsters. I know some fans of the show are big fans of Digimon. Then also, I guess we could talk about Transformers: Robots in Disguise. Anybody who's watched the show for any amount of time is well aware that I'm kind of a Transformers fan. And you played Optimus Prime on that series, one of the best Transformers series, in my opinion, because it was the one where they came along and said, you know what, would it kill us to make the kids laugh every once in a while? It was one of the first shows that in a long time that was actually genuinely funny.
Well, a lot of that, I think, was Peter Spellos. I think his work as Skybite, you know, deserves interrupting you and making note of. He was fantastic. I wouldn't exactly say that I hope. My performance as Optimus Prime wasn't one of the comedic linchpins of the show.
Yeah. Skybite, for those... I actually encourage anybody who is a fan of comedy and good cartoons to watch this series, even if you're not a Transformers fan, because one of the things they introduced was this character named Skybite, who was a bad guy. Neil, I think you coined it best. You said he was something like a Shakespearean villain who is forced into the role of Second Banana. And he secretly wants to be a poet, and so he's composing haikus in the battlefield. He's very emotional, prone to violent mood swings, where he'll be crying in one scene and then full of himself in the next scene.
You identify with Skybite a lot, don't you?
I think all of us identify with Skybite. He speaks to the best and worst in all of us. He's a great character. But equally great was the role of Optimus Prime in that series. So, yeah, Transformers, Robots in Disguise, people should watch it. You were in Power Rangers, for crying out loud. Power Rangers Time Force.
Several seasons, actually, before Time Force and Lightspeed Rescue. I would play intermittent villains or just background villains, like the film. I, of course, was an Oozling, and to tell you how memorable that was, I was watching HBO one day and the movie came on and I was all, oh, you know, that would have been fun to work on that. And then all of a sudden I hear, and I go, oh, that's right, I did work on that. Ah, the memories. Hopefully we'll see you at Power Morphicon this summer and in Pasadena.
Oh, when is that?
This summer?
I think it's like August 19th-ish, something like that.
Power Morphicon.
So they're bringing in Power Rangers from around the world, and you'll see a bunch of us old voice actors stumbling around, you know. A lot of the voice cast. We go to it because it's in our backyard, and it gives us the chance to get back together and regale each other with tales of day gone by. or days or whatever. You know, I'm working on 3 hours of sleep here. They can't all be gems.
That's the other thing we need to make a point out of is that Neil is here with a sinus infection and running on 3 hours of sleep. This man is a prince for making the time to be on the show. You also worked on Naruto, is that right?
I've just recently been allowed to say that I am the voice of Madara Uchiha.
Oh wow!
So yeah, that's like a deal, you know, a big deal or whatever. I played incidental roles before, and so now it's nice to actually play at least a temporarily running character.
That is super, super cool. So you're on the same show as Tara Platt and Yuri Lowenthal, two other voice actors that I had the pleasure.
It is two of my favorites in the business. They are not only fantastically talented, but so incredibly nice. And you know, I mean, fun to look at and everything you hate in other human beings.
That's an awful lot.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying is it's like, really, you can't just have one of those things. You know, they're married, they're happy, they're friendly, you know, talented. It's like, wow, really? Yeah. Spread the wealth here, kids, yeah. Please.
Well, wait a second. Now I'm going to show how badly I am at measuring time. You're fairly
how
recent.
How badly you are at measuring time?
How badly I am at talking, too.
How badly I am at speaking.
And I've had a full 6 hours, 7 hours of sleep. But you just recently got married, too. Recently speaking in terms of, like, within the past five years.
Yeah,
in the fall.
But
congratulations.
Interestingly enough, we met actually back when the Mets won the World Series. We'll just say that.
Awesome. So, yeah, mazel tov. But going back to Tara and Yuri, two very lucky people, I wanted to take an opportunity to plug a book that they wrote, which is called Voice Over Voice Actor, What It's Like Behind the Mic. Guess who did the cartoons in that book? This kid.
Who?
Yeah, me. That's right. Wow. I worked on a book with them. So, yeah, people can go check it out. It's at bugbotpress.com/books. So you got Neil's endorsement that they're good people, and then you can see drawings of them.
And they know their stuff. And they know their stuff.
Good enough for Jersey not to bring them down.
I don't put anybody down on this
show.
No,
bring them down.
Despite my cartoons.
Well, they wrote the cartoons.
I just did the art.
So. Oh, we'll see.
See, they were safe.
And actually, you're quite a talented cartoonist.
Oh, look at him. But then we got to get through Neil's video game credits,
yeah,
too, because, man, this guy just, he's done everything. You're in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. You play Long Haul in that game.
Right, it was fun to actually say, I'm going to kill you, Optimus Prime. Just kind of like, hey, flip side of the coin.
Ninja Gaiden, Sigma 2, Final Fantasy 13, and we should mention, this is probably a big important one, StarCraft, because...
Two, you know, don't tease the folks. That's sort of like saying, you know, Lando Calrissian was in... Star Wars.
Oh, my mistake.
No worries.
People are already yelling in the chat. No, they're not.
He was in StarCraft 2, you buffoon!
But I just love the fact that Neil is one of the good and right people who refers to Star Wars as Star Wars.
What do you mean?
Well, that's because I was around when it came out, and that's the movie I saw.
I have arguments with people that, in fact, the original scroll did not say A New Hope.
It didn't.
I know it didn't. I was there.
It didn't. And it's an insult.
It is. It's like, yeah. It's like these kids going, no, really, it was there.
I've worked for Mr. Lucas, ooh, you know, under that giant tree. I've done, you know, four Star Wars video games. And I'd certainly love to work under that tree again, but I still... Luke and Leia weren't brother and sister in that first movie. Come on.
I would argue they weren't in that second
oh
movie.
Oh, my gosh. But... So we're going to get through the rest of Neil's credits.
This is what happened when you stopped
talking.
Let
me fly my geek flag. Come on, Neil.
We got to plug something of yours, Neil, because this is another thing. This is something I spent money on, and I encourage other people to spend money on, too. And you did the reading of the audiobook, StarCraft II, Heaven's Devils, which is a great book, and it's read terrifically by Neil.
No, I really enjoyed doing that, and The sequel book, Devil's Due, is great. They just unfortunately didn't do an audio book version. And, you know, I met Christy Golden at Comic-Con, the writer of the book, and she gave me one of the biggest compliments I've ever gotten, which was the book was so easy to write because I could hear you.
That sounds like a segue, too.
You know, you just sit there and go, thank you, little lady. That's awful kind.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about this book, and this is why I want to plug it. This is the first book recommendation, an audiobook. It's so good because it's a well-written story, but then you're also hearing a master storyteller who knows how to use his voice to make the... It doesn't feel like a radio drama. It feels like you're getting a really excellent reading from a really good tale, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the way, Neil, that you can kick into like a really young voice to a really... I'm sure that... possibly some editing going on there, but you can kick from like 17 to 65 in the drop of a hat, the spin of a dime, or whatever the expression is for that.
I heard you did it all in one take, Neil.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
Yeah, all 14 hours of it. One take.
You are a master.
Not quite. But, you know, it certainly is different as a voiceover actor who spends most of his time doing video games where... You know, I mean, now I guess we are getting more monologues, but for the most part, a lot of it's quick lines and, you know, sentences here and there. And then to transition over to reading pages at a time certainly was different, you know, for me. And look, the whole experience of doing that book was very educational for me. And a lot of fun, and I thought that the story was great, and really kind of opened up kind of a Butch and Sundance kind of a period for these two really well created characters, you know, and only time will tell what will end up happening with them. I'm just glad I got the chance to play Tychus a couple of times, you know.
Well, people should support it by buying the book, the audiobooks, and then they'll hire you to do more books. That would be really great.
Well, thank you. I did actually do the, speaking of doing younger voices, I actually did the audiobooks for I Am Number 4 and the sequel, The Power of Six. Ooh, ah.
And I'm waiting for the next sequel, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, why was 6 Afraid of 7, that old one?
Yeah.
But, okay, so...
Sure, because you had to explain that one, right?
Thanks, Jersey.
That was sort of the Jeopardy way of telling a joke, wasn't it?
Oh, my God, I'm getting tag-teamed by these two guys. This is going to be a popular one, I know. Whenever people give me a hard time, it always does good for the ratings. What I want to talk about today is people are probably asking, who are watching the show, saying, well, geez, it's a comic show. We should mention that Neil also writes comic books. Eyeofthewolf.com, anybody? Go there.
I certainly try to, and we're you know, unfortunately, the economy hit the production pretty hard. And we're trying to get that back up and done, because we, you know, having gone to different parts of the world and kind of teased people with the story, a lot of people want to know what happens with it. Because the only thing that's been out there on the market was the, kind of teaser first chapter. So we're hoping that, you know, we're going to be able to finish that up. So I appreciate you talking about it.
Well, yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, iavethewolf.com, so people can see that you have every reason to be here on a comic show, but also...
Well, and in fact, I'm teased it before, but Optimus, we're going to be releasing that as a strip web series.
We should talk about what Optimus is, because I haven't talked to you in a couple of years, and so let's refresh everybody's minds as to what Optimus... Where can we find more about that?
Right now, just on Facebook at All Hail Optimus. Optimus actually originated from me doing Optimus Prime, and it would be between takes, and I would just be kind of silly, and, you know, I'd read things a little differently. Autobots, transform, you know, and just have some fun with it. And then Optimus kind of was born out of trying to break up the guys in the booth. I don't remember any specific lines from any games or any or any shows that I've worked on very often, but I do remember working on this one game because the line was so perfect for Optimus. It was, "I strike from the shadows." And I thought that that was just so brilliant, and I just kind of would talk about Optimus. And a friend of mine who's a comic book artist in Great Britain, Simon Williams, who's incredibly talented, worked on The Hulk and Transformers out in the UK. So anybody out in Europe who's looked at Marvel in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years is familiar with his work. But he actually did some mock-up, you know, pages for Optimus, including, I believe, Galva Bunny as one of the villains.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it was pretty funny, and I wanted to do something with that, but I kind of feared getting into some copyright issues, you know, with some certain mega corporations out there. So we made some adjustments, and as I would talk to an animator friend of mine, we kind of realized that, you know, if we wanted to have all these adventures with Optimus, the best thing for him to be would be an actor, you know, because then if we wanted to, you know, have Optimus have an adventure in an anime style, well, that would just be a TV show that he was working on. And if we wanted to go with something more cinematic, then that would be a movie that he was working on. Because ultimately we were sitting around and we figured out about, I don't know, 9 different origin stories for Optimus. And how could those all be supported? And it was just, well, the only way to slip a character into so many different things is make him an actor.
Yeah, and then it broadens your storytelling potential with lots and lots of different kinds of send-ups and settings and approaches
exactly.
And styles.
So,
yeah.
So we have our first season, which is actually a setup for a movie that he is making with his friend, Billy Bitter Beaver. Bitter being his nickname.
You know, although he likes to say, "I'm not bitter, I'm just kind of angry."
And that sounds really like someone I know.
You know, Billy represents all those actors who keep getting cast in parts, and they're thankful to be working, but ultimately, how do I say this? They play the ethnic 7-Eleven clerk in the episode of 24 where the 7-Eleven gets shot up. Mm-hmm. They play the red-shirted crewman in Star Trek. You know, I mean, happy for the day's work, but it's like, really, can I not stick around for a little while? And the biggest problem of all is that Optimus got his start as a bit player on Billy's TV show. And so ultimately he overshadowed him, much like Michael J. Fox did to Michael Gross in Family Ties.
I for sure thought you were going to go for Meredith Baxter.
I thought you were going to go for Tina Yothers. But anyway.
Well, who wouldn't go for Tina Yothers?
A huge star going in.
Right.
Come now.
Right. So that's it.
A friend of mine wrote this, and I think it's perfect, but you want me to depress you? Remember that wonderful movie, Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Where they went back to the 30 years, the quaint old year of 1955.
Yeah.
Well, if we went back 30 years, we'd be in quaint old 1982 watching Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, that does make me feel a little bit sad. But
and old.
Yeah.
I'm reliably informed by someone in the chat that you're only as old as you feel.
No, that's true. Somebody did say that in the chat.
Is that with your right hand or your left hand?
I was going to say, my arthritic digits, I feel very old.
But that's a good segue to talk about the chat for a second, because we are doing this new thing. Matt Dubay, producer of the show, did this really cool thing where he set up where there's a Twitter stream, and anybody who uses the hashtag comicsaregreat on Twitter to do any kind of live responses to what we're talking about today, it will be, anybody who's watching the video is seeing this on the show. So it's your way to participate on the show. I'm watching the stream. I have a search going for the Comics Great hashtag. If you got an interesting question, thought, or insert that you want on the show, I will be glad to bring it up and bring it to Neil's attention. But another segue that I missed out on earlier is...
I tried.
I know you did. I know you did, and I appreciate that, Paul. You know, there's another reason that I asked you to be here, Neil, and one of the things that you do for a living, I'm a huge fan of voice actors. I think that they are so much more interesting than the old meat puppet actors,
such a charmer.
I'm not going to get any actors on the show now. But no, but because Neil has to do everything with his voice, he's got to evoke a character, he's got to make me believe in this person just with his voice. And if you watch an animated feature, especially in today's traditional animation, you know, we're past the age of Pinocchio and Chuck Jones, animation for the most part isn't as good as it used to be. The voice carries a lot in this, right? And so he has to find a character with, like, just like this, what you heard him doing it, where he was able to evoke this bitter guy, the red shirt on Star Trek, and he captures that just with a different kind of inflection, intonation, and whatnot.
By the way, I'm really impressed that you managed not to, like, turn Bitter Beaver back on me. But
because I've been trying to get to this topic here that I've been dying to ask you guys about. And, you know, writing characters is really hard. We've talked on the show before about character design, how you design a character that's instantly recognizable. One of the things that Neil does for a living is he designs a character who's instantly recognizable by the tone of the voice. And then, Paul, as a writer, I'm sure you're thinking all the time about how do I find a way to have this character say this as only they could say it. So, and especially when you're writing things like you've written for DC.
I have.
You've got to write characters who lots and lots of people know, and they're familiar with what's the right way this character talks, right?
Batman can't sound like...
Batman doesn't say, what's up.
No.
That's an easy way.
Certain things that you have to capture the vocal, and even sometimes the cadence. Which is hard to do.
That's why Kevin Conroy is the one and only Batman, right? Because only he did it right.
Oh, now you're dissing Adam West now?
Well, Adam West is good too, but I'm just thinking.
And he also did voiceover for some of the early Batman cartoons.
You know, guys, I gotta say, I liked what Reno Romano did with it. You know,
I Jersey is kind of a snob, and he's like always looking for the one true thing. He's not open to interpretation, and
I love interpretation. I'm just saying that I got a problem with the current Batman, where he sounds like I don't know what that noise is that guy makes. The guy who's playing him right now in the movies, the blah, 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 blah thing. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Look, if that's the one flaw in those films, all right,
you're picking up on, yeah.
No, and of course, like you know, that's a different situation because, cinematically, you know, they're aided by the lighting. They're aided by the fact that we can read their lips sometimes. We can see their faces. So maybe they can get away with things that are a little harder to interpret. Or it could be the 87 speakers that they have in the theaters.
Oh, yeah. That could be part of
that does probably help a little bit. Yeah.
Somebody's asking in the chat, Purple Box, Renee Van Beltzen is asking, Neil, who your voice acting heroes are. Do you have any?
Oh, absolutely. I one of the proudest moments of my life was having the chance one night to work with Mel Blanc. It was a fundraiser for a children's musical theater that I was working with at the time. And it was just amazing. Oh, geez, sorry. I've been distracted by a call from my agent, which will return after this is over. Sorry. Some things just have to wait. Anyhow, but Mel... Up until that point in time, I was a kid who did impressions, and so, you know, I was the 12-year-old who did Jimmy Carter, or Jimmy Stewart, you know, and of course with Jimmy Stewart, there's always the difference between the young Jimmy Stewart, what would you like me to lasso the moon for you, Mary, on the old Jimmy Stewart,
oh wow, who,
be on with Johnny Carson, you know.
And the Campbell Chunky Soup.
So I did those sorts of things. And boy, when you're a fourth grader doing that, you are popular with the lady.
What happens when you get to ninth grade, though?
Well, then you meet Mel Blanc, and he says, "Eh, impressions are for hacks."
Oh my!
Nobody does that. Nobody wants that. Do original characters. And I pretty much when God speaks to you, you listen. And I pretty much let go of impressions and just more at that point started having my guidance from sketch work that I was seeing on Saturday Night Live. You know, I certainly love the work of Dawes Butler, Paul Frees.
Oh, for crying out loud, yeah.
And these were guys that, you know, either created original characters or did impressions that were so bad that they ended up creating new characters out of that. And so I started more doing work in that respect. I mean, look, one of my happiest moments in my professional career was working with Dick Gaudier, who voiceover fans might know as Rodimus Prime.
Also a cartoonist. The original,
yeah.
Really?
An amazing artist.
I just remember him from When Things Were Rotten.
Oh, thank you. Very nice. You scored points with that one. Nice
pull. Hit the bullseye, so to speak.
Of course, Jaime the Robot.
Oh, yeah.
And Broadway's original Conrad Birdie. But let's... Enough about Dick Gaudier.
Is there ever enough about Dick Gaudier?
No, not really. Okay. But we might bore everybody out there in cyberland.
Yeah, that's not quite in our generation.
Other heroes, I mean, you know, certainly within the industry now, Billy West, Maurice LaMarche.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are so amazing when it comes to creating characters, you know, Phil LaMarr. I mean, and look, they're all on one show. So
I know. Yeah, I was just saying,
have a half hour, you know, to do with that. Those guys are just absolutely brilliant.
So I'm wondering if you could identify, Neil, what is it that they do that's so brilliant? I mean, and speak from your own experience if you can. It's like when somebody throws a drawing in front of you and says, like, find a life for this character. How do you get into that?
Well, I mean, certainly one of the reasons that they're so good is they create characters. They don't do voices, you know? And I had... If you ever watch Billy do a scene with his three characters in Futurama, you'll see a physical change within him when he goes from character to character. And he's obviously so familiar with these characters that he's able to pull them at random and get right to them. And they're also written differently. They're written with those voices. So... You know, he's not going to end up, you know, having a Fry line and read it like Zoidberg. You know, it's just not going to happen because it's a Fry line, you know, and he knows that and he reads that and the writers wrote it that way. Now, me, when I'm doing a character, we get different sources and that's the information that we get. Maybe it's a picture. Maybe it's a description, maybe it's both, maybe it's dialogue. And so it's tapping into where does that live within me? And what kind of size are we giving this character? I mean, that's one of my biggest questions that I'll ask a creator is how big, you know? I mean, because two of my video game characters that I'm known for right now, you know, Tychus Finley from StarCraft and Skadge from Star Wars the Old Republic. And people ask me, well, you know, what can you tell me about Skadge? I know Tychus, and I say, simple. If the two of them got into a bar fight, the first casualty would be the bar. You know, I mean, these are big characters. And so I reach to a place where, you know, that bigger sound kind of comes from. And then you work from there. And it's a matter of intention and what they look like and what their face might be. You know, And you mix that stuff up, and you know, let's say that the dialogue for somebody who's gigantic like that is a little softer and more timid. No. Well, you guys understand, it's a whole different kind of a character, and then you tell me that he's Scottish, in fact. Oh, he's shy. Well, don't want to talk no more about this. This is crazy. I gotta go.
Oh my gosh, it's like watching a magic trick every time I hear somebody do that. But yeah. You're gonna say something, Paul. Does this ring a bell with you?
What I'm really interested in is when you are writing, how vocal do you get in developing character voices? I mean, do you find yourself, you know, playing around with that? You know,
well, I mean, I'll read a line aloud and see how it strikes my ear. I think, you know, I mean, look, I've got a lot of stuff on the shelves. I'm trying to get produced, but ultimately, it's I write what I'd want to see, what I'd want to hear, you know, and I guess I kind of play characters the same way, you know. It's I'm a fan of enough different stuff, whether it's plays or movies or TV or just human beings, you know, and it's just got to strike my ear right, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So, heuristics. It's like a trial and error, fooling around with it, feeling it out sometimes, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And certainly when I'm in the booth and I'm doing a line, I mean, I'll give it more of a physical interpretation as well to see how it feels, you know?
I want to hear from Paul on this, because as a writer, I'm wondering if you do that. Do you act out your scenes? Because I know I do. When I'm writing, I'm actually pacing the room, and I'm trying to feel out the scene with my body.
It varies. It varies a little bit, but I also spend a lot of time just visualizing it rather than working it through physically. I find fight scenes is where I tend to do the most physicality. But yeah, it's important to you have to have a sense of you know where people are in the scene and how they're relating to each other. So yeah, there's a certain amount of that.
But I'm not even talking about like also like you're blocking, like using old stage terminology, like where are all the
sometimes
elements.
Blocking helps though.
Sure, absolutely. But I'm talking about like I'm just working out what my, because our characters, one of the analogies I use in my comics classes is when you're making comics, you're the director, the cinematographer, the editor, and every actor on the stage. And that's like a cool power in a way, but it's also a huge responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And so I try to think of my characters as actors. And I thought it was interesting, Neil, that you said earlier that you got to find something in you. Like, where is the part of you that can speak to this character, right? And it reminds me of the thing that writers say, write what you know. But that doesn't just mean, like, write about your life. It means look at all the characters you've met in your life. Look at all of your reactions to these characters. Dig into yourself and find...
Well, look, I mean... You know, for an example, I was using this weekend, I did a show called The Mouse and the Monster. And in one episode, I played a stomach. Okay? Now, he was having a conversation with the heart. And, you know,
the heart was like this really good-natured voice from another actor.
And I figured, what's the counterpoint? Because, you know, the heart's actually...
tired of living inside of this monster, so he wants to go out and see the world.
And the stomach reacts, oh, great. It'll be nice without you. You know, worried about fat and hardened arteries. So basically, it was a relationship between two coworkers, you know, who just one was stifling the other one from, you know, sure, he was making things more efficient. He was making the you know, both... achieve their goals, but ultimately he was making for a really dull workplace. And I think I can certainly access that. I mean, look, I don't think you have to go with method acting and really live everything. What I tell people is voice acting is the closest thing to being a 6-year-old other than being 5. Because you use your imagination. I mean, When you're 6 years old and you've got a red towel around your neck,
yeah,
adults have to tell you that you can't fly.
Oh, man, thank you for that. This is something I also say in my classrooms. I teach some adult classes as well, and sometimes adults get they've gotten far enough along their life without having to draw or tell stories that they've sufficiently been indoctrinated with this idea that they can't, right? And so a lot of my job is telling them that they can. And when where do you get your ideas? How do you come up with characters? I'm like, look, it's just like when you were on the playground as a little kid. It's exactly the same thing. You say, deflector shield, I shoot a laser at you, and you're talking out this whole story with your friends, coming up with a story on the fly on the playground. It's exactly the same skill set, right?
The only thing that matters is you've got to have rules, and you've got to follow those rules. Now, if your rules mean that people can walk on the ceilings and the roof, then that's fine as long as you stick to your rules, no matter what they are, no matter how crazy it is.
Your internal consistency.
Whether it's a guy who's, undefeatable because he talks to fish.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, well, suddenly you can't give him heat laser beams coming out of his eyes. You know, he's got to stick with talking to the salmon and going, hey, intercept that nuclear missile for me, won't you?
By the way, speaking of voice acting, casting Ernest Borgnine as the Aquaman stand-in on SpongeBob SquarePants was one of the greatest casting choices I've ever heard in my life. Have you guys seen that? No.
I have not, but...
he plays an aging Aquaman called Mermaid Man, and it's Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy instead of Aquaman and Aqualad, and they cast Ernest Borgnine as Mermaid Man and Tim Conway as Barnacle Boy. Oh my gosh, that was
Tim Conway as Barnacle Boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're in an old folks' home. It's
and wasn't that the most appropriate place for McHale's Navy reunion?
Yeah.
But anyway, well, okay, so it comes...
Well, you see, I mean, look, good casting is good casting, you know? But the other thing you've got to remember is when stuff like that works a lot of times, the unsung hero there is the director, you know? When a video game works, when you're watching a cut scene, a lot of that has to do with the director having the capacity to direct actors who are working 4 days apart.
That's true. We should make a mention of that. Like, another challenge of your line of work these days is a lot of times it's not the big old Sunbow studio or the Wally Burr studios with you guys all standing around a table doing a table read, right? It's a lot of the stuff is recorded days apart.
They still do that for most original TV animation, but unfortunately... I'm not booking those as often as I'd like, but, you know, hopefully that'll be changing real soon. But, yeah, certainly when you're doing anime and you're dubbing, or when you're doing an audiobook, or you're doing a video game, and, you know, my work these days is predominantly video game work, you're working alone. Yeah.
So in those cases, the director kind of becomes a collaborator on the storytelling, like giving you a sense of like, well, maybe you could push it in this direction a little bit, get a little bit like more gravelly, a little deeper, giving you a sense of what kind of character you're trying to find.
No, not so much that. It's more along the lines of this is the emotional situation. I mean, it's if Andrea Romano, by the way, who's, you know, like, seriously, if she's not the best director in the industry, certainly the conversation starts there. But she directed StarCraft II. And, you know, Robert Clotworthy and I never worked in the same room at the same time. And if you watch those cutscenes, you'd never think that. And that's obviously, you know, a big tip of the hat to her because, look, if I'm playing the scene really loud and Robert's playing it soft, then it seems like we're in two different rooms. Mm. You know, she's not only got to let us know the proximity to the other actors, the emotional intention, the emotional interplay, because again, if I'm playing it in a different style or a different manner, that's like, you know, that's like having... half your panels being a manga style and half your panels being a Jim Lee style.
Yeah. We're getting a technical question in the chat. What's your favorite microphone, Neil? Do you have one?
Not so much. I mean, you know, obviously if you got the money for a Neumann, I mean, that's not only a good mic, but it's fun to say. But there are lots of good ones out there. And, you know, I do most of my recording actually in studio.
Yeah.
So that's up to the genius behind the control board.
Okay. Well, I have only one more thing, and then I'm going to let you go and call your agent and nurse that sinus infection and maybe catch a
thank
nap.
You.
But Dan Gilveson wrote a book, Bumblebee and Me, Life as a G1 Transformer, story about Dan Gilveson, the actor who played the original Bumblebee in the original cartoon series. And he did an audiobook of it, so I got to listen to this book read by the guy talking about like what his life as a voice actor, what it's like in the studio, and then a few out-of-school stories about what happened in the control room. And as I'm listening to this, I'm like, for God's sakes, why doesn't Neil Kaplan write a book like this, please? You don't have to write a how-to book like Tara and Yuri did, but if you, I'm just saying, and I'm sure other people in the chat will agree with me, if you decide to do like a little memoir kind of thing where you actually read it.
Well, I am, you know, I'm actually looking more along the lines of getting back on the stand-up stage.
Really?
You know, and using those kind of stories every now and then. No, you know, I appreciate that. That's very kind. But I always, when I think about it, you know, as far as a memoir goes, I think there are so many other more interesting people in this industry. you know, I guess I keep myself humble, or at least I try to, because look, the thing that kind of goosed my career a little bit was walking in another actor's shoes, an actor who has a worldwide following, deservedly so, has done wonderful work. But certainly there's no shortage of people on the internet or at conventions that are willing to let me know that I'm not him.
Oh, and, really?
And and that's okay, because look, I'm a fan of other people's work, and it's all well intentioned. You take it with a grain of salt. I guess it's one of the reasons why creating a character like Tychus Finley is really close to my heart.
Yeah,
because that's at least to this point in time, mine and mine alone so far. And I appreciate where the fans are coming from, you know, that's all good. And so again, you know, it just doesn't let me get full of myself to the point where I think I'm that important, you know?
Well, that's incredibly modest of you, but yeah, just, you know, for what it's worth, you know, you did a pretty important, we were talking earlier about interpretation and me being open to interpretation or not, Paul. I think Neil's Optimus Prime is pretty darn good, and I wish they would have cast him for the new Transformers Prime series. I really do.
Look. Anybody's always welcome to write letters.
That's true. Let's send some emails.
What are letters?
No.
Oh, you mean paper.
Anybody can send an email. If you really mean it, put pen to paper and put it in the mail.
And save the post office.
Yeah, you know. Save the post office while you're at it. There you go.
Well, not only save the post office, but then you can use those. You can go get the Pixar stamps, and those are really cool.
Oh, there you go.
And the fact of it is that, I certainly would love it if people would do something like that in support of work that I've done. It's very nice. But think about it. I mean, you guys do work that fans appreciate. When you get an email, that's nice. But when you get it, an actual note or a card in the mail, I mean, who does that anymore? That really means something.
I was going to say, no one.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think.
Very few people. So, yeah. Like, let's say that they did get 10 letters in the mail. That might actually get somebody a cameo.
Well, there you go.
You know? Right. And certainly, you know, I wouldn't be adverse to working with Michael Bay in Transformers 4, a new reboot.
All right, well, duly noted. I want to give, before we let you go, anything you want to point people at that we didn't mention, or anything you want to give put underline in black crayon, like visit this today, please.
Well, you know, I do actually run a nonprofit called Audio Theater for Our Troops, which you can find at atfot.org. That's www.atfot.org. And that's all about hopefully creating a nice big fat library for our men and women in military service to be able to listen to and get some entertainment. Because anybody who's ever sat on an airplane and tried to watch a movie on an iPod or on that little screen understands that your peripheral vision still shows you you're on a plane. Yeah, but if you've ever listened to an audiobook like Heaven's Devils, and you close your eyes for a couple of minutes, you know, for a little bit, and I'm not saying for a long time, but for a moment, you're transported. You're someplace else.
Yeah.
And if you think about men and women who work on a submarine or an aircraft carrier, or even are on a base, you know, in Korea or Germany, when they're off duty, they're still at work.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, and so if I can get the voiceover community, the voice acting community together and record some stuff and give them a little bit of entertainment as our way of saying thank you. MP3 files take up very little space on a hard drive or on an MP3 player. And it's just, it's something I want to do to say thank you for doing what you do. And allowing goofballs like me to do what I do.
That is super cool, Neil. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for mentioning that, too. So, okay, well, we'll let you go. And
Oh, yeah. And also, you know, I volunteer at the Braille Institute for the Blind. So if you want to, I also think if you're interested in voice acting, a great place to get good experience is to read at your local Braille Institute or Reading for the Blind and dyslexic, because, you know, if you can read short stories, it gives you the chance to work on creating characters.
That is great advice. And yes, and I hope that we can work things out to get you out here for Kids Read Comics one of these years.
And I really, you know how much I really want to do it. I really do.
That would be great to have you come out and actually lead a couple workshops on how to do what you do. That would be so much fun and it'd be a big thrill for me. So, but this was an equally big thrill getting to talk to you again. It's been too long. And thank you so much for making time to be on the show, Neil.
Real pleasure. My pleasure. Meeting you,
my
Neil.
Pleasure. Thank you both.
All right, have a good day, Neil, and take care of that cold or that infection. Yeah. Take care of that infection.
Feel better. Yeah.
Feel better. Thank you.
Yeah, coming up next, open and infected.
Thanks, Neil.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so now we're going to shift gears over to the book recommendation segment.
Should I do my recommendation real quick?
You should do yours real quick before we switch chairs. Let Sharon Iverson and I just want to keep Sharon standing around in the studio for as long as possible.
So I'm going to hold up my book. It is Alison Dare. It is by the two J's, J Torres and J Bone. Initial J, not J A Y.
J A Y, yeah.
And it's about a little girl whose mom is an archaeologist and her dad is a superhero. Mm. And these are two phenomenally talented guys doing a really, really fun book for all ages that all ages can enjoy. It's fun. It's kind of goofy from time to time. It's gorgeous. I worked with Jay a Bone on it. He helped out with the Gotham Girls. He did the inking and some of the layouts on one of them. And he's just phenomenally talented. They're both also working on Saturday morning webtoons, I believe.
Oh, with Eric Orchard and those guys.
Yes,
yeah.
And that's great stuff as well. So,
Saturday morning webtoons, new comic or two every Saturday for, you know, it's kid friendly stuff and funny stuff. And
exactly.
Yeah, Eric Orchard, who's getting, I got to get Eric on the show because I mention him like every other episode, Incubat on Twitter.
And now I should probably let Sharon have the seat.
Yeah, I guess if you want, you can let Sharon have the seat.
Okay. Well, you know, it seems the thing to do.
So we're going to pull the old switcheroo.
I'll probably be back for the
final
for
thoughts.
The tease.
Yes, you will be back. All yes, Paul Story of Storyville.com, Storyville on Twitter, Storyville on Facebook.
No, Paul D Story on Facebook.
Oh,
I know.
You skunked it.
I think I need to change it.
But that's, you can find Paul wherever you can find.
Wherever Storyvilles are sold.
Yes. Any place where there's people talking about comics, Paul is there peeking his head around going, well, you guys talking about me? You talking about me? Sure. Can I be part of this?
I'm like Courtney Cox's character on Cougar Town last night, where she was this, she's the eavesdropping ninja. Anybody starts talking about her, it's like, was that about me?
Yes, so thank you, Paul, for being on the show.
My pleasure, as always, Jersey.
I think you scored me some points with Neil, which I appreciate, with all of your old-timey references.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so while Sharon takes the stand, I wanted to make some noise about some stuff. Let's see, there's some things going on at AADL. And one of which is, oh, let me see if I can pull it up. I think we can make a noise about this now. Comics.aadl.org. Yes, Sharon Iverson. Oh, yes. It's up and it's working. Look at this.
Oh, my gosh. It's a lot more than when I looked the other day.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So, yes, if everybody who's listening now wants to go to comics.aadl.org. Man, we've been working for a long time on this. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited about it. Comics Are Great was the first step towards building this new thing, where there's a subdomain website on the library's website with us highlighting all of the different comics events going on, different books in the collection, the podcast that we're doing. This is the place now to get the video podcast. I've been holding out on releasing a video podcast of the show. I wanted AADL to have first dibs on that. So you can go there to subscribe to the show's video feed. You don't have to just get on the YouTube anymore. And there's even in the upper right corner of the site a featured artist section.
Yeah.
And
I see Gail.
There's Gail Williams of patbird.galesore.com. A little refresh. And then what do we get? Oh, we got Gail again.
I saw Katie first.
Katie Cook is on there. Paul Story is on there, too. So, oh, and there's Jim
Ottaviani.
With his book Feynman. So we're using it also as a way to let the local community know about the awesome cartoonists in the area and the work that they're doing. So, oh my gosh, I'm so stoked on this. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. So I gotta stop and thank Matt Dubé. I gotta thank Eli Nyberger. I gotta thank Andrew McLaren and all the folks in the IT department for putting this thing together. It looks really great. I'm so juiced. Oh, and there's the events blog on there too.
Right. Well, so. I haven't put up the blog yet, and Paul got away, or at least is outside the door, but we've got Paul coming on the 4th of March, Sunday, from 1 to 3 right here at the Downtown Library to talk about how you can, as a comics writer, do your best to help the artistic side, the letters, the artists execute the story that you are telling. Yeah.
So super cool. So that's at the free Comics Artist Forum Sunday, what did you say, March?
Sunday, March 4th.
4th from 1 to 3 p.m.
1 to 3 p.m. in the fourth floor.
Fourth floor conference room, everybody.
Meeting room.
Oh, meeting room.
Because there's also a conference room.
So
we want to make sure they know it's the meeting room.
And Eric EJK on the Twitters is posting into the chat for us, comics.aadl.org/events/list?ID=13935. No one will remember that, but it'll be in the show notes, everybody. Okay, so, and then there's another event that I wanted to make a note of. Convention season is upon us. People are going to get ready to start going to all sorts of different kinds of comic conventions, whether it be Detroit Fan Fare or MoCA or SPX, Chicago Comic Con, whatever. Tyler James, a friend of the show, friend of the Lean Into Art thing that I do with Rob Stenzinger, leanintoart.com, he's going to lead a workshop for us there called Absolute Consense with Tyler James, and that's at leanintoart.com/workshops. And I want to read the description because... And this is going to be end of March. Registration is open now, and we have early bird pricing on it for the first week. So right now you get it for $42. You get an hour and a half workshop, 50 strategies to double your fun, triple your contacts, and quadruple your profits at your next comic book convention. A lot of good information from Tyler James of Comics Tribe. He's the guy who spearheads the 30 Characters in 30 Days event every year. Really smart guy. He's going to do an hour and a half presentation for us with follow-up in the forums at leanintoart.com/workshops. Sign up this week, and you get the early bird special pricing. Then the price goes up after that. So I wanted to make a note of that, just in terms of like comics events, comics program, mm-hmm. comics education.
Mm-hmm.
So did you bring some books?
Under the table they are.
Okay, Yoda.
No, I'll bring them above the table.
All right, and we can move this.
And I think you know that I'm sometimes a sucker for the nonfiction biography area. And
you have to hold it up to there.
Okay,
there you go.
This one's shiny, so I'm holding it up. It's 21, The Story of Roberto Clemente. Both the books I'm mentioning today were named to the great graphic novels by a committee, the Great Graphic Novels Committee of YALSA, the Young Adult Library Services Association. And it's his story of his life, but it's done by a gentleman named Wilfred Santiago, who is also from Puerto Rico, as was Roberto Clemente, and brings to the reader a lot of insight of Clemente, not so much as he is the baseball player, which it does highlight that, but also his childhood, his where he came from and where he went back to after every season ended, because many of you may know that today there's a Roberto Clemente Award given for any baseball player who's involved in humanitarian activities. And in 1972, at the end of his record season in which he hit his 3,000th hit, he was on his way to Nicaragua to bring supplies after an earthquake. He was on this fourth plane because the first three were supposedly commandeered by, I forget who was leading the government at the time, but fell into the wrong hands, we'll put it that way. So he was going to be there personally with it, and the plane did not make it. It crashed into the ocean. So anyway, one of the things I just want to mention that's kind of cool about the book is the sepia tone. To me, this was not an easy read. I read it a couple of times, partly because I was not familiar with all the people in Clemente's life, but also sometimes the layout was a little challenging. But I went back through it a couple times, and it really is amazing how much is packed about him, about the way of life, the culture of the time, and the sepia kind of takes you back. Yeah. And it's interesting that it's just, you know, bare bones color. And I didn't plan this, but the other book that I have that we've talked about,
Marzi, yes,
is Marzi. And Marzi, when I read it the first time, it's, let me kind of back up. Marzi is by Marzina, and I do not know if I'm saying it. It's S-O-W-A.
Sova.
Sova.
That would be my guess.
And she is the writer, and her partner, Sylvain Savoia, and I'm butchering that, I am sure, illustrated it. And it's the story of her life as a child growing up in a Poland that was going through tremendous change. She was born in 1979, and 10 years later, I guess we call it Solidarity. I'm sure it was pronounced differently, but is coming to the fore and pushing the government to make significant reforms. And what I love about this book, too, I originally read it in an advanced reader copy, and it was all in gray and black and white tones. And then I got the library copy, which, of course, is the one issued. And
but
there's
still muted tones.
Very muted. Her eyes are what struck me because the cover shows her as blue-eyed. But throughout the book, I'd be curious to ask why her eyes are not, you know, complementarily colored.
Interesting.
But very expressive, very expressive. And I'm, of course, I don't even know if I've got pictures of her showing through. Yeah, this page maybe has some others.
Well, it looks like she's working with a very limited color palette. It's all warm colors.
Yeah.
There's no cool colors in there at all. I'm not seeing any blues.
Right.
The closest you get is like kind of like a warmish gray.
Right.
So.
And it doesn't bother me at all. It just, you know, it was kind of interesting to
because even on the back cover, she's got brownish eyes.
Yeah,
weird.
Yeah. So it's an amazing story, very much to be compared to Persepolis in the fact that, you know, here are some young people who were caught, and she was much younger at the time, It talks about she's still a kid and she's still got kid things going on, and you know, but around her and through and everything, she is experiencing the changes that are coming, and not being a grown up. Sometimes she's realizing it's probably better not to be a grown up. You know, she's sort of invisible to it all, but quite the observer of what's happening around. So highly recommend both these two biographies.
Super cool. Yeah. I can speak for Marzi. That's a great looking book. Mm-hmm. I have not read it all the way through yet. Okay, I got some book recommendations. I want to start with Cowboys and Robots. Two of my favorite things that go great together. And for years, I've wanted to do a Wild West story with robots. And then two great cartoonists did it before me, so now there's no need to. I'm off the hook. First one is Daisy Cutter by Kazuo Kibuishi. And yes, this is in the library's collection.
Awesome. Yeah.
The whole collected version. I got the first version from Viper Comics with the two chapters. But it's a Wild West story with a lot. It's got a lot of fun, a lot of action, adventure, a lot of heart. And it also features all sorts of, I don't know if this is going to show up on camera, but like cowboy robots. And in drawn in Kazoo's style. Oh, come on. Give me a break. It's going to be a great book. Yeah. You said
Daisy's one tough cookie.
Yes, she is. And it's got an awesome chase on a train with a robot that has guns bristling out of everywhere. The next one, another cowboy robot story, is Iron West by Doug Tenapel. Again, cowboy robots, what more do you need to know? But it's Doug Tenapel, a great storyteller, creator of Earthworm Jim, Rat Fist, done a lot. I think he's done like 14 or 30 graphic novels.
Wow.
Maybe 50 now, and he's like, you know, he's just, the guy cranks out a graphic novel in his sleep. But it's really fun, energetic stuff, really kind of like brushy lines, pure black and white art. But it's also just a super, super fun read. You'll blast through it, and then you won't be sorry for getting it. And then I checked. This is not in the library's collection yet.
We
have to work on this.
I know.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I know you're not the selector, though, so this is not your fault.
No, but I need to pass that word on.
Yes,
my
because this
job.
Is, you know, I used to have Casey on the show all the time. I need to get her on the show again. Casey Van Heiss of wintersandlavelle.com did this great book called Winters and Lavelle. You've read this one, right?
Yep, I own it.
Yeah, she described it as sort of like Chronicles of Narnia, as if Edmund and Lucy were the only ones who went, right? So it's this young kind of obstreperous boy and his innocent, wide-eyed, sweet sister who find this orb that allows them to transport to this mythical place. And there's these scary deer men, and there's all sorts of political intrigue with these different princes, and they start to develop these strange powers while they're there. So it's super fun. Fantasy. I would recommend this to young girls or anybody who enjoys entertainment that young girls enjoy. and plus, Casey's art is just gorgeous. It's one of my favorite comics updating on the internet right now at wintersandlavelle.com. But the volume one is available on the site, and we need to get more. Any librarians watching out there, put this in your collection for your young ladies.
I want to know when volume two will come.
She's working on it.
I know.
And yeah, she's Space Case with a K on the Twitters if you want to follow her. She also posts really sometimes very angry thoughts, sometimes very funny thoughts on Twitter. But yeah, good old Casey. I need to get her on the show again. But in the meantime, you should check out her comic if you haven't already. And then speaking of Doug Tenapel, I also wanted to throw out one plug while we're on the topic of comics cartoonists. Doug Tenapel was on another comic show that if you haven't checked out, you should. It's called Making Comics, the Making Comics podcast, and that's at makingcomics.com. They recently did a two-parter with interviewing Doug Tenapel about his work and his philosophy. They also had the fellow, and I'm blanking on his name, the guy who works on Axe Cop, well-known cartoonist, and now lots of people are going to correct me. But really, really great show, two-parter, fantastic listening. If you like this kind of talk, I know you'll love that show, too. So giving them a little plug for Doug Tenapel at tenapel.com and makingcomics.com. So anything else that we need to make any noise about, Sharon?
I don't know. Just be sure to check the new website.
Comics.aada.org.
If you're around AADA or around Ann Arbor on the weekend of March 3rd and 4th, drop in on the 4th and take in the next forum.
Yep. So, man, once again, I have to thank you guys for all this great support you're giving to all the comics programming. Oh, man. This is even better than last year when I opened up that access guide and saw all that comics programming. Now I got a freaking website with all the stuff, events, then podcast, the Comics Home with, featured artists honoring our local cartoonists.
Yeah.
Oh,
I better get to a computer fast because I just did the blog for the March 4th event, and I wasn't thinking that I could post it right there.
Yep, you
right
got to tag. You got to tag.
So
it
I need to get it in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So okay. So super cool. Well, thanks everybody for listening and watching. Sorry about the technical glitches at the top of the live stream of this one. We had to move it to a different streaming service at the last minute. But Matt Dubé, our producer, came through like a champ, like a hero among men. I saw some ladies lined up outside of the front of the library just crying at the heroism that was going on in the control booth today. Poor Matt. But no, he really did a good job today. And this show will be available at comics.aadl.org within the next day or so, and at comicsaregreat.com and on youtube.com/comicsaregreat. Lots of places to get it. Choose your favorite place to get it. And just remember, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another show at comicsgreat.tv. And if you use the comicsgreat hashtag, then we can put your tweets on the air and you can interact with the show, as it were. Maybe this will be one more way we can twist Sharon's arm into getting on Twitter. No, I'm never going to get you on Twitter, but I keep on trying. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening and watching. Until next time, I've been Jersey Drozd of comicsgreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay.